This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Hi, SG2 Perspectives listeners. We are trying something fun and maybe a little dangerous. On May 22nd, we're hosting a live podcast where you can join us for the recording of an episode. Our relationship right now is a little one-sided and we want to meet you. So we'll put you in my chair. You can ask us questions, share your insights, or just heckle us. There's more information in the show notes, but you do need to register so you can get a link to attend. Hope to see you there.
The punchline we're seeing is those that have grown, that have built a business model with a pretty strong thesis around what they're intended to do, are in a better spot than those that might have tried a bit more of a scattershot approach to growing, moving into the plan side, moving into some of the care delivery and enablement, but perhaps struggled to really find that identity and niche that they were seeking to set up.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Trevor Durin. Joining me today, Joe Marr from Vizient's Value Transformation and Payer Provider Alignment Team, because Joe pays really close attention to the payer side of healthcare. I look forward to every couple quarters getting a set of notes from him when he's spent so much time reviewing recent earnings calls and other outputs from payers. Got one recently wrapping up last year. Obviously, last year was the end of an unexpected year for payers, Joe. And so wanted to get your summative thoughts on what that means, where payers stand today, and what that's going to mean for the health systems this year. Thanks so much for joining, as always. If you had to summarize payer perspective on the current healthcare environment, what would that be?
There's a few interesting trends. The payers would definitely say they have not been immune to some of the financial headwinds that we've certainly felt on the provider side for the last 2+ years. What we're seeing is some of the payer behaviors and focus are starting to shift more. It's a very common theme right now that the health plans are moving, especially on the insurance side, away from growth and really prioritizing margin. It's really looking at how can they manage the premium dollar more effectively. Nowhere does this show up more than in Medicare Advantage, where they rushed to grow in the last few years. Still certainly a growth market, growth opportunity, but the health plans have been dialing back a little bit of their expectations there. We're even seeing this show up in their guidance for the stakeholders, their shareholders, et cetera, that looking ahead to 2024, they're expecting some of the utilization trends that we saw last year come up, especially in the Medicare Advantage, outpatient, ortho CV space, to really persist into this year. And they're also saying that based on these trends, these weren't necessarily factored into some of the guidance and financial plans and their Medicare Advantage bids and their plan designs for 2024. The upshot is that Medicare Advantage this year is likely going to face some more financial headwinds, financial pressures, especially on the plan side. We're going to see those impacts continue to come into our conversations, both on the negotiation side, but also just strategically. How are we both approaching from a system side and from a plan side, the Medicare Advantage lives, Medicare Advantage enrollees in our market?
Joe, you've been on the provider physician group side of the healthcare world. If you were there today, how would you see opportunities because of that? And how would you see challenges? I see a lot of challenges.
There are a lot in both of those categories. Sticking with the challenges side, as the health plans look for more efficiencies, they're investing more in some automation and capabilities. There's just going to be some natural growing pains that go with that as we look at some of the utilization management, prior authorization, as some of that tries to move towards more automated processes. We could expect there to be some challenges and growing pains with implementing that. Certainly just looking at making margins in 2024, where there's more contentious relationships, we could see some of these high dollar claims, these denials, some of the contract yield really come to bear in some more challenging negotiations and existing relationships. The good news is from an opportunity perspective is enough of the environment is shifting as we look at price transparency, the aging population and managing the premium dollar, that there's more opportunity to really look at payer provider alignment and partnerships in a different lens right now, that a lot of systems and payers are realizing the economics and the approaches to creating and capturing value in healthcare delivery are becoming more interdependent as we look forward in future years. That really bodes well to opportunities and partnerships. That said, these partnerships take time to build our high-performing networks, to build these pathways that we can manage our patients through. And a lot of it can revolve around, do we set up the economic models, be it through value-based care or other non-traditional alternative payment models that make this a more sustainable economic future for our members and patients, for the health plans and for the health system, that we've got to find a new way to align and grow and create value longer term.
I'm actually really excited to hear you say that. I got a similar question from a member recently, and I had to say, yes, that's the optimistic side, but I'm not sure for how many systems that's going to be the reality. Pull on that thread a little bit. Do you think it's going to be a continuation of the types of partnerships we've seen? Do you think new models are going to emerge? Where do you think the low-hanging fruit is for a health system that doesn't have a lot of experience in whether we call it a partnership or moving into value, taking on risk, shared savings, whatever?
What's important for health systems right now is to know their value proposition in the market as we go into these conversations and know our relative strength. What do we bring towards a network adequacy perspective? How are we performing from a cost and quality perspective? And as we look at reapproaching these negotiations and asking for more in the negotiations, one of the first questions we'll get from payers is, that's nice, but your quality might not necessitate that, or your volumes might not necessitate that. Coming well equipped with the data and resources we have to bear, we're not just coming in and asking for a rate, but putting together a compelling case in these conversations is going to be more fruitful for developing these partnerships. That said, it's going to vary a lot by market. There's some markets where we've really been able to build some relationships, build some trust in the last few years. And then there are other markets where the health plans and the health systems are not on the same page. And moving forward is really going to require us building those relationships and partnerships to get past what might be otherwise a tenuous or tense relationship. Some systems that are doing this well, they're even elevating the relationships. They're identifying, is it just individuals that were really getting stuck at, be it on the traditional roles? And is there a chance to elevate that and bring the conversation more around the partnership and the opportunities longer term? You're exactly right, Trevor. It's not going to be a slam dunk. It's not going to be easy in all cases, but the health systems and the health plans that have been able to work together are showing some of that durability in their relationship, and some of that fabric is really starting to strengthen in these partnerships.
I'm excited to hear that. Let's pivot and look back at just the payer side of the world. Let's break it into a couple pieces. Are there patterns among the biggest payers, Blues, United, Humana, or did they all have a little bit of a different struggle at the end of the year?
The commonalities, many of the health plans, especially with the large MA book of business, saw their medical loss ratios, their MLRs, towards the high end of the range guidance, which means less profit for the systems than they were necessarily projected, in large part due to the increased utilization. That was pretty common across MA plans, especially the large health plans, where there were some trends that bifurcated or split a little bit more on the care delivery side. These care delivery arms, so think Optum, think CenterWell, think Carelon, where the large health plans have invested more in the care delivery capabilities. And a number of the plans cited that despite seeing their insurance book of business medical loss ratios go up, they were able to outperform their medical loss ratios with their care delivery capabilities. So their MLRs for their care delivery arms outperformed the medical loss ratios that the insurance arms were showing up, that the insurance arms were delivering. That really speaks to how the health plans are really integrating more into care delivery and really looking for those opportunities to more proactively manage the populations, that they are moving out of just the insurance business and looking for those opportunities in the care delivery business.
Did they do better because it's just the diversification offset where the high volumes buoyed their care delivery arm? Or was it that their care delivery arm did a better job delivering savings?
It's more the latter, that the care delivery arms have been built around identifying and working with the higher risk populations. And a lot of this starts with the annual wellness visit. They get their patients in, they get their attribution right, and they build that care team approach around the patients early in the year so they could get their risk coding and capture in place. But more importantly, they get their care delivery model in place where they can work with the patient through the care team, through the care coordination function, get the medication reconciliation. And where that's showing up is when they're able to work with these patients, these chronic, higher need, higher cost patients over 2, 3, 5 years, that's where the gains are accruing, that it's a multi-year approach that's really creating value. And they're doing this by contracting. They're taking a very pluralistic approach to contracting. So Optum will contract with Aetna and Humana, et cetera. So they're not running closed networks. They're taking open network approaches and really leaning into their care delivery model as a value creation mechanism.
That's promising. I wonder if it'll mean that this year they really double down on putting more shared savings and risk onto their employed providers and seeing how much they can squeeze out of that. That's interesting. What about the next tier in just in terms of scale of payers, the Cigna's, Aetna's? Did they have a really similar experience? They've each focused and segmented in a slightly different way. Any different story there?
Yeah, it was an interesting year to see that we had Humana divested its commercial business, Cigna's divested its Medicare Advantage business. Big picture, the bigger getting bigger still. Most of the Medicare Advantage growth was Aetna, United, and Humana from a membership enrollment perspective. There was still plenty of activity, though, in that next tier of players. For example, Alignment Healthcare, who's really focused on the Medicare Advantage space, has continued to grow grow and focus on their care delivery and care management capabilities within the plan, within the constraints and structures of the plan. And they've really cited that their model is really designed to manage those medical loss ratios over multiple years. And that's really where they're able to create and capture value. Take Oscar Health, who's been more active on the exchange market and really targets a younger demographic, is continuing to take similar fundamentals. They're riding some of the wave of redeterminations and some of the shift into the health insurance exchange business. And they've seen some enrollment growth, and they're applying some of the fundamentals around getting their higher need patients in and some of their chronic disease programs that are really technology enabled and designed to engage with, for example, a Breathe Easy program for asthmatics and COPD patients. And more broadly, they're just in getting their members in through annual wellness visits as well. So really looking at how can they get sticky with their member, not just from an insurance product perspective, but engaged in their care delivery and getting them set up for a successful year from managing the total cost of care perspective.
And what about brand new players in this space? A few years ago, we kind of saw this new wave. Oscar, you mentioned, and a few others rode the wave. A lot got washed away. What does that landscape look like?
It's tough to say right now. It seems to be following the macro trends where we're seeing more of these startups, these new models, these new entrants struggle for any number of reasons, which is to be expected as we go through just the normal business life cycle, that some models are going to work, some models aren't going to work. But as capital becomes more expensive, a little bit more scarce, we're starting to see some of these models dry up. And I think what we're seeing is those that are more durable, that have persisted, are showing some sophistication in their business model. Take, for example, Privia, a group that's really done well in both enabling their practices, retaining their practices in both the fee-for-service and the value-based terms, moving into their risk arrangements, their total cost of care arrangements with some sophistication around maturity of the market, the maturity of their provider groups, and really making some pretty sophisticated decisions so that they are setting themselves up for success, knowing that these are dynamic environments. Utilization changes are going to impact different organizations in different ways, different groups in different ways. The punchline we're seeing is that those that have grown, that have built a business model with a pretty strong thesis around what they're intended to do, are in a better spot than those that might have tried a bit more of a scattershot approach to growing, moving into the plan side, moving into some of the care delivery and enablement, but perhaps struggle to really find that identity and niche that they were seeking to set up.
It's good insight. And like you mentioned, might just be a product of where we are in the economic cycle, but that's real good. Pulling back macro question, this time next year, what do you think we're going to be talking about in terms of how payers rebounded, the speed at which health systems were able to respond and set up partnerships? How has payers' outlook for the year shifted, and what's your take?
In 2025, which is where we're starting to look ahead to, it's going to be an interesting year. A lot of health plans signaled a potential for dialing back on some of their MA benefits this year. We didn't see a lot of that come to fruition. And I think as patients are using more of the supplemental benefits and the health plans are saying, from a funding perspective, this is more of a challenge for us economically, we're going to see health plans start to make decisions around what are those critical supplemental benefits they want to keep? What are some of the supplemental benefits they want to move out? We could see plan designs shift, in which could then lead to some more member movement, which is an interesting tension point where the plans are really focused on trying to retain these members longer term. 2025 is going to be an interesting year as health plans try and balance the member retention with the generosity of benefits. They're looking at reestablishing the long-term profitability. It's going to be an interesting year. A lot of the health plans have pointed to their risk-based partners and their high-performing networks as opportunities for them to continue to grow. This year, where those partnerships are strong, they're going to get stronger because of the opportunity associated. So I think that will potentially have implications on 2025. These are long cycles. It takes time to implement these high-value pathways, these new technology solutions, to onboard members and patients. So it's going to take time. Some of the economic pressures we're feeling are going to be a little bit stubborn. They're likely to persist. Those that are really keeping that multi-year lens on the problem, these opportunities are going to be best positioned to navigate with the true north in mind for better managing the premium dollar.
Joe, I think you're right on. I saw some recent data from Deft Research, does consumer research on the insurance side. Number one reason enrollees' patients were dissatisfied with MA, copays and supplemental benefits not matching their expectations. They're juggling with what can we cut that's going to have the least impact, or where do we have to double down because it's connected to enrollee retention. All right, so flip to the health system perspective. Health systems this year are continuing to focus on margin and cost improvement, but finding growth, and some of that's just scale growth through M&A, traditional growth. And then they're looking for stability this year, some stabilization in terms of overall strategic direction. How is the payer environment going to impact health systems' ability to hit those targets?
this is going to be an interesting year on that front. The conversation Bill Woodson and John Becker recently had, and they highlighted the One Health System, that they really thought about their margin streams through the health system, through the physician practice, through their health plan, and then their other bucket. I think a lot of health systems, as they look at their payer strategy, their revenue strategy, really going to have to take into account the macro environment and how is margin in the future going to look different than it looks today. Are we at capacity from an inpatient perspective, or do we have capacity in terms of how expansive do we want to be with our payer strategy? Are we looking to have more of a pluralistic or a more narrow targeted focus? What would our market allow us to do, and how might we be able to create and capture value through a different approach to our payer strategy, as well as some of these other trends that are starting to bubble up more and more. So we look at the exchange enrollment that's growing in a number of markets, and a lot of health systems haven't had to place as great a focus on that, but we could see that continue to become more and more pertinent to our contract negotiations and to the members and patients we're serving if we see coverage continue to shift there. It's really going to be taking a larger look at our payer strategy, our revenue strategy for the year ahead, and thinking about how are we positioned both for volume and margin today, and then how is that likely going to shift going forward across payer classes, across our value-based contracts, and then across our other potential revenue streams that might exist out there.
Love it. Thanks. Listeners, you've all just got a little glimpse into what it's like and how excited I am when Joe sends me his run through of all the payer earnings. This is super insightful. Thanks so much for sharing your insight and perspectives. Talk to you again soon, Joe.
Thanks, Trevor. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review us, and or follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn at SG2 Healthcare. And if you want to talk more about innovative healthcare strategies, you can always email me at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Finally, SG2 is a Vizient company, and there are a bunch of Vizient podcasts that you might like. You can find them at Vizient / podcasts. Have a great day.